Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello, welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Rimebold. And there is a lot to talk about. There is no off-season in the NFL. And Jeff, we'll get to some of our state of the franchise teams. We're going to restart that series a little bit later in this podcast. We'll get Cincinnati, Washington, and hopefully Green Bay. But we may push Green Bay to next week, depending how much we talk about other stuff. We'll hear from Vikings general manager Rick Spielman, and we'll take some questions in the mailbag. But Jeff, lots of news, lots going on around the NFL as these rookies start to hit the field for the first time with the rookie minicamps.
Yeah, you know, and Neil, it is really, really interesting. I was in Seattle this weekend, and I actually went down and watched the watched them get their first day in. And I, as you know, it was absolutely a circus because of the young kid they drafted with one hand. And I'm going to tell you something. It is such an amazing thing to watch these kids start to transition into National Football League players, because it is a big jump for a lot of them.
Let's have a look at some of the news that's been knocking around, Jeff, because there has been a lot. Shaquem Griffin was kind of limited a little bit by the Seahawks, and rightly so, because they want it to be about football for him at the moment. So we'll talk about the Seahawks in a second, because they had another parting of ways with a big-name defender from their team. Cliff Averill's been released. But let's start with the news that Matt Ryan has signed a five-year, $150 million contract extension with the Atlanta Falcons. He's now under contract for the next 6 years with the Falcons. The new money, when that kicks in, Jeff, will be $30 million per year, $100 million of that guaranteed. There we are. We've got our $30 million per year quarterback, the first in the NFL, and it is Matt Ryan.
Well, you know what? Good for the Falcons. I think this is the wave of the future, Neil. You've got a guy that you know can get you to the highest level. They've been to the Super Bowl with Matt Ryan. Now, again, they did not win it. And again, but just like Dan Marino, that'll always be that thing on his resume if he doesn't get it done. But you've got a guy that can take you there, then you better do everything you can to ensure that you keep him for the duration of his, the duration of his career if you can. And I think that's the defining thing here, is that Falcon fans now will know that who their quarterback's going to be for the future, and they can build around that. And you're going to have to build around it, because that is a big cap jump that we're talking about.
Yeah, he's 33 years old, but Jeff, he's the kind of guy, when you're around him and you're in the locker room with him, you know that he's not going to get lazy with this money. He's driven to win a Super Bowl for this team. He's a good guy. I think he's very focused on staying driven and motivated. So that's one thing. You've got that kind of, you can rest assured that you're spending the money in the right place. But again, this is just a kind of domino effect of the quarterbacks getting paid. We saw Jimmy Garoppolo earlier in this offseason was the highest paid player in NFL history for about a month. Then it was Kirk Cousins for about a month and a half. Now it's Matt Ryan, and I can imagine the conversations are taking place right now in Green Bay, Wisconsin, between Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
Yeah, and think about the agents of these guys now. When as each of those checks gets cashed, the price tag goes up for guys like Aaron Rodgers, who are going to be, it's going to be, project number one for the Packers to get him under contract and get him signed. And you say it's the price of doing business, and it really is, Neil. It's supply and demand economics, and there are very, very few, and there is a huge demand, and the market is showing us that I don't know where the limit is, really, when you sort it all out. You just go, it's just amazing that these guys can command that kind of money, but they are deserving of it, because it is the most, it is the most difficult position to play, and it's the most important position. I think what was really interesting, you just touched on something I want to talk about. Do you as we look at Joe Flacco, since he got his big contract, his play has really gone downhill. And how much of that is due to the players around him and the circumstances? Or is it, you know, as you say, he got the big money now. Has he taken the foot off the gas, you know? And that's, boy, that's the one thing that always scares you when you, you know, pay for a big contract for a player.
Yeah, I think my personal belief with Flacco is certainly they haven't had the skill position players around him, Jeff. But I wonder with him as well if there was a level of expectation since that Super Bowl run that actually was maybe unrealistic, because the Ravens were in a position where they had to pay him right at the time where he came off the hottest playoff run that we'd seen in a number of years. But maybe it was a one-off. And actually, when you look at Flacco's numbers, it has proven to be a one-off. I think he's in the lower sort of two or three starters in the NFL since getting that contract extension in terms of quarterback ratings. So I wonder if, you know, he got hot at exactly the right time, and it led to a level of expectation that probably shouldn't have been there.
Well, yeah, and I think now you look at it, and part of it's his personality, I think, too, Neil. You know, he's so low-key, and he doesn't, you know, he just cool. He's just so cool. That sometimes can be misconstrued as he doesn't care, but obviously he cares deeply, and he's a great competitor. But, you know, look at the situation now. They go out and they get RG3, and then they draft Jackson, and they're both diametrically different guys. Mm. And so what does that begin? Immediately the conjecture begins, well, Joe's on his way out in Baltimore. And I think that's kind of an unfair statement. I think that's still his team until, you know, one of those guys proves that they can win consistently at the NFL level.
That clock could be ticking, though, Jeff, because this time last year we were saying the exact same thing about Alex Smith, and he's been traded away to clear the decks for Patrick Mahomes. If Lamar Jackson has a good year in practice, and he's only got to do it in practice, the coaches have only got to see what he can do. You know, that's natural that kind of talk is going to occur, and it's going to heap more pressure on Joe Flacco. I think, as you've said in the past, you know, and as I know it's been well documented in the past, Flacco actually plays quite well under pressure, and maybe having somebody looking over his shoulder stops him having that kind of meh attitude which he has been known to have in the past.
Well, I think too, Neil, think about this one. This is also the flip side of those big contracts, because once you have to pay a guy that much money and he's that big a cap hit for you, you know, you're always trying to do what in this business? You're always trying to get younger, and you're always trying to get cheaper. Mm. And so if you're not getting what you feel is the kind of production from that big contract that you feel, you know, that's why you paid the money. Well, now if you got a chance to get a younger, cheaper guy, I really truly believe that's part of the Patrick Mahomes saga in Kansas City. Mm. It's a much, much easier cap hit to take Mahomes' salary than it was to take Alex Smith's.
One team that's going to get younger and cheaper is at the tight end position, and it's the Dallas Cowboys after Jason Witten hangs up his shoulder pads and helmet. Jeff, what a career for Witten. 1,152 catches. Second all-time among tight ends, fourth all-time regardless of position. In 15 years, he missed just one game, and none since week 6 of his rookie year in 2003. He played in 243 straight. Jeff, tough as old shoe leather, first of all, Jason Witten.
Yeah, you know what, Neil, when you come at me with those numbers at that position, because we're not talking about a kicker or, you know, a guy who's in a limited contact role. That tight end is getting involved in the run game, the pass protection,
especially the way he played it.
Goes out and catches. Yeah, exactly. He was a grinder. He was a, you know, put your hand in the dirt, old school kind of player. And to have that kind of durability, because you know, over the course of a 16-week season, 16-game season, and the playoffs, you're going to get injured. You're going to have to play hurt. And again, for him to go out there every week and play at the highest level he could, for his football team and be the kind of guy he was in the locker room and with the young players. And, you know, it's really kind of sad when these kind of guys, you know, have to step away from the game because, you know, they're special guys. There aren't very many Jason Wittens in the business. And you know, the game's worse for him, you know, not being with us in the 2018 season.
He kind of had his hand forced, Jeff. He had a great offer from ESPN. We will hear him now commentating on Monday Night Football. So Witten kind of accelerated the retirement process. He said he kind of got to the edge of the cliff a number of times and couldn't quite jump off. He couldn't quite give up professional football. Now he has, this late into the offseason, has it kind of left Dallas in a bind at tight end?
Well, I'm sure that, you know, that obviously, just because of his age, you got to start thinking about, well, Jason's not going to be around a long time. They've had some challenges at the tight end position. They've not been able to find an heir apparent. You know, Martellus Bennett was drafted to be that guy. That didn't work out. They've had guys come through there that are good tight, but they're not, you know, they're not that feature tight end that everybody's looking for. And you know, again, that does put a hole in him because the one thing that you could count on with Witten is you were going to get whatever he had. You were going to get all of it for 16 weeks. Now you got to, you know, again, that does, this late in the offseason, that does create a hole. And I think it's interesting. That's not the only one of these kinds of things that's happened. But, you know, Neil, you talk to these guys all the time. And you know how when it's that time and you're getting close to mini camps coming and you're getting close to OTAs and the off-season program and all of a sudden, you know, do you get that kind of question, do I really want to get up in the morning and go do that? That's when you know it's done. And I think that's, you know, happens to a lot of them.
Yeah, some of them don't know that. Some of them don't know they don't want to do it anymore until it's time to almost go out and do it again. I mean, the great Barry Sanders, he retired right on the eve of training camp for the Detroit Lions in July. When that happened, it was a real shock and it was a real blow to the Lions because they they weren't expecting it that late in the off season. So until you kind of have to go and do it, I think it's something that players don't fully know that they're ready to walk away.
Well, again, because our season in pro football is such a monster, you know, I'll be honest with you, we're in the same situation as coaches. You know, we're now about, I don't know, we go to training camp on the 18th of May. So what are we, 10 days away, 8 days away? And you start to think about, here it comes. It's that grind for the next 6 months that's just every day, 14 hours a day. There is no, you know, you don't. It's not Sunday and you go to the park and have roast dinner with your family. It is every day grinding, 14-hour days, all the film, all the pressure, all the. So for us in the industry, it is tough. And, you know, there's only a very, very few guys that, you know, are lifers that, you know, do it until they're 65 or 70 years old. That's what makes Tom Pratt and those guys just such amazing guys to me because they're doing it into their 80s. And I'm going to tell you, this is a young man's profession, both as a player and a coach. And frankly, Neil, as a broadcaster too, because I know it's a grind. You know, I actually thought about that the other day when I was watching you do the draft show. And I was thinking to myself, you know, it's just about time for Neil to start put his game face on. And you know, those are tough deals. Like, I mean, you know, you do the show at Sky and then, you know, you go home and get about 5 hours sleep, come back and do another. That ain't easy on you.
It's not, Jeff. That's why you got pneumonia at the end of the year. Nearly put you over the edge, mate. Nearly saw you off. Listen, one man who's trying to see off a challenge is Ben Roethlisberger because the Pittsburgh Steelers took Mason Rudolph at quarterback in the third round of the NFL draft. Big Ben has been very vocal, Jeff, in criticizing or questioning that pick, that selection. He says, I was surprised when they took a quarterback because I thought maybe in the third round you can get some really good football players who can help this team now. Jeff, this is a funny one here because Big Ben spent the last 2 years pondering retirement. Last year he was like, I don't know if I have it anymore. All of a sudden, Todd Haley goes out the door. Big Ben commits for another 3 years, and he's all bent out of shape that Mason Rudolph got selected. The man's been telling us he's going to retire for the last 2 years.
Well, I tell you, it is really mixed messages. And I heard the interview, and as I listened to it, Neil, I was just really, really surprised. Because you're the leader of the team, you're the face of the franchise, you're all of that. And you're open. I mean, to me, it wasn't even thinly veiled criticism. It was open criticism of the draft strategy. And of when he said it, he goes, you know, but I'm not a coach or I'm not a GM, right? And so, again, now he's kind of set himself up as not adversarial towards the coaches in the front office, but that's certainly not the way you want to approach it as the leader of the football team.
I just thought it was telling when Big Ben actually referred to the front office as they, as they. It wasn't we, it was they.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, you're setting up an adversarial situation between yourself and you represent, who do you represent, right? Ultimately, you represent the players because you are the face of the franchise. And you are the biggest leader in the locker room, a guy who has been openly critical of other players at times, you know, Martavius Bryant, some of those guys. But now, you're now taking upon yourself to pass judgment on the draft strategy. I just thought it was really surprising to me and not what at all what you want to hear coming from your, you know, face of the franchise, your quarterback. And, you know, again, these kinds of things, you know, certainly aren't settling for the Steelers, for Steeler Nation, and for Coach Tomlin. That's again, not the way you want to go into your offseason program.
Let's just touch on a couple of other bits of news then, Jeff. We talked about the couple of high-profile releases. We saw Kobe Fleener was cut loose by the New Orleans Saints. He had just two seasons there. It was supposed to be a big target for Drew Brees. He ended last season with concussions and didn't play from week 12 onwards. I think he had 70-odd catches over two seasons with the Saints. And Cliff Averill, a Pro Bowl defensive end for the Seattle Seahawks. Add him to the list, Jeff. Jimmy Graham, Paul Richardson, Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman. You know, and we still got this question mark over Cam Chancellor. Last week when we were talking about the Seahawks, I said there was a question mark over Cliff Averill. Now he's gone. The winds of change keep blowing at hurricane force through Seattle.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, having known some people in the organization, having watched them closely, I really think, Neil, this is a, as you say, not a house. I hate to use the term house cleaning because that makes it sound like, you know, they were bad guys they're getting rid of. I just think it's a situation where every team goes through it, where, you know, you get to a point where you have to turn over your roster, and you have to do it for financial reasons, you have to do it for age reasons. Eventually, let me just say this, and John Madden, I think, was the first one to really bring this out. There's a shelf life for every message, and there's a shelf life for every messenger. And so, you know, Pete's not going anywhere in Seattle. They are in lockstep still. And so you look at the guys who've exited that program, and at some point, most of them have been vocal, and questioned, the way they do things, this, that, and the other. And I just think that from a standpoint of all of those factors, Seattle felt like it's time for them to turn over the roster. You know, Dez is a perfect example of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Can Dez Bryant still play? In my opinion, yes, right? But when you get when you make the kind of statements that he makes, when you do the kind of things that he does, when you're that petulant as a player, well, you know, it gets around the league. And at some point, you know, people are going to just say, enough's enough, and we're moving in a different direction. And, you know, so you've got to find another place to play. Cliff Averill, not saying he's a bad guy. Mike Bennett, not a bad guy. You know, Richard Sherman, not a bad guy. Mm. Just guys that have, you know, their time has come and gone in that situation.
All right, one more thing on the news front, Jeff, and I can tell you now we will actually do the Green Bay Packers in next week's State of the Franchise because we are talking a lot. We still want to hear from Vikings general manager Rick Spielman, and we want to take some questions in the mailbag. But let's talk about the kickoff and potential new rules for the kickoff for 2018. There was a player safety summit in New York. A lot of special teams coaches were there. Jeff, maybe take us through how you think the kickoff is going to look, because they're trying to make it almost, I guess from a layman's terms, I'm going to say it almost a bit more like a punt return. So you can't have a running start with the kickoff, the players on the kicking team. You can't have eight men within 15 yards of the kicking point on the return team. They're trying to basically stop this where a guy sprints 50 yards downfield and collides with another man who's running upfield. How different is this kickoff going to look now in 2018?
Well, I think this is, there's two things that more than anything else, you know, when I heard the league come out and say that there was no plan to do away with the kickoff, first of all, I was ecstatic because I think it's part of the game that, you know, is a big part of the game. Mm. And, I, you know, as a traditionalist, I don't want to see it go out. But I also understand that player safety has got to be the paramount thing. And so the long runs, as you say, those long 40-yard sprints, and then there's a collision at the end of that, that's where the injuries come. Now, do you remember 3 years ago or 2 years ago, Neil, when they said, okay, we're going to, you know, they're moving the touchline back for the kickoff and yada, 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 yeah. Yada, right? Mm-hmm. Because they wanted more touchbacks. Well, the thing that we talked about, I remember you and I having this discussion. That's going to help, but it's not the answer, because why? The blockers have their back to the returner. They have no idea how deep that ball's kicked, so what do they got to do? They've got to execute their block regardless of whether it's touchback or not. So that's where they were still having residual problems with the collisions. By moving the players closer to one another, I think what we're going to end up seeing, Neil, is much like, do you remember the old 4-on-4 drill that we used to do at training camp, mm-hmm. to work on coverage?
Yeah.
Where the players are no further than 5 yards apart, yep. when the ball's kicked?
Yeah.
That's where I think we're going. I think it's going to be a very, very unique, because they've asked the special teams coaches. They've gone out to every special teams coach, all 32 of them, come back with ideas of how to change the kickoff and the kickoff return game to make it safer, but yet not take that part, an exciting part of the game, away from the fans. And I think that there are some guys that I've talked to that are advocating, much like the old 4-on-4 drill, only now you're doing it with, you know, 10 guys, because the kicker doesn't count, but, you know, you're doing it with 10 guys, and it's going to be, I think it's a chance for the game to keep the kickoff and maybe bring the return game back into the game, which had kind of disappeared, really.
Sounds like, Jeff, when you look at the reaction coming out of the United States, because there's no kind of, you know, there's concerns on both sides, kickoff team and return team, it seems like there's not much incentive to run one out at the moment, and the NFL's almost again trying to put us in that position where the ball's just spotted on the 25. I think you're right to be excited as a person who loves the kickoff, but I wouldn't suggest that, you know, you're out of the woods yet. I think Mark Murphy, the Packers president, he said that kickoffs lead to 5 times as many concussions when compared to any other play. Unless that comes down, Jeff, to something close to being normal with regard to other plays, I still think they'll do away with it in a couple of years. Whether you like it or not, I think that's the way we're going.
If in fact those numbers hold true, right? You understand what I'm saying? So I think the special teams coaches don't want that out of the game. I'm just telling you, they don't.
Yeah.
And we just went through this with in our league, right? We just had our officials come around, and you know the blocks that are another. This is interesting. We're having this conversation. You know the blocks on punt returns where you set the wall and the wall goes inside and you know pick guys off.
Yep.
Right. That's now illegal in our league. You can't do that anymore. And the reason why is player safety. So the way we're coaching the game is continually evolving to keep the player safe. There's no time in football history where it's safer to play the game than right now. And it's continuing to trend in that direction.
Yeah.
So, like I say, I think where you get those long runs, those collisions after long runs, and frankly, Neil, I think it's going to happen in the NFL. The crackback blocks, the, you know, the block that got Burfict knocked out in the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah.
You remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Juju.
Those are all going to be taken away because it's just not safe. And so as a coach, it forces you to adjust. And I'll be honest with you, Neil, I kind of like those wall returns. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is when you got players getting hurt because of it, you got to get it out of the game. There's enough ways to keep this game, you know, physical and you know, intense and all the things we love about football that way without having guys get hurt.
All right, it's been a busy week for news in the NFL. It's been a busy off-season, of course. Few have had busier off-seasons than Minnesota Vikings general manager Rick Spielman. Late last week, I caught up with him to talk about the signing of Kirk Cousins, the process of going after that franchise quarterback, and the NFL draft. Here is my conversation with Vikings general manager Rick Spielman. Rick, let's just start with the addition of Kirk Cousins to the Minnesota Vikings. First of all, not just the player you're getting, but the kind of person you're getting, because I guess it's always important to bring the right kind of people into the building. Tell us about the addition of Kirk.
Yeah, no, the point of emphasis here is not only what they are as football players, but what they are as people. And just being around Kirk Cousins, and we're actually in our off-season program night right now, he's probably even better than we anticipated. Not that he was bad to begin with, but he's been phenomenal so far, being with his teammates, the personality, the leadership he has shown. He just has one of those type of personalities that people gravitate to, and he can throw the ball pretty good as well.
Which kind of helps us as well in that position. Rick, you know, I've been around Kirk. We've hosted events in the UK. We've travelled on tour buses together. Last year, he was over with myself, and he was with Kurt Warner on the same bus. And literally, I'm not joking, mile after mile after mile, he was picking Kurt Warner's brains. And it's a guy who's been in the NFL for a few years now, but just continues to want to learn and want to get better. That must be a general manager's dream.
Yeah, no, that's what's so refreshing about him, is that he knows he can play even better than where he's at right now. I think he wants to be considered one of the top or one of the elite quarterbacks in this league. And with his work ethic and the mentality you just described, there's no question in our mind that he'll be able to reach that level. And he's already at pretty close to it right now.
Rick, what was the process? Can you tell us about the process of securing Kirk Cousins to the Minnesota Vikings? Because it did happen relatively early in free agency. I guess it can't happen until free agency opens, but then you have to move quite quickly.
Yeah, no, because we had a pretty sticky situation with all the other quarterbacks we had here, with Case Keenum and, you know, Sam Bradford and Teddy Bridgewater. And we have a 48-hour negotiating period before free agency starts. And so everybody is open to negotiating with the player's agent. And once that we knew that Kirk Cousins was going to be our first visit, that I knew we had a pretty legitimate shot of getting him signed here. But in the meantime, you're holding your breath because you also know that Case Keenum, the Sam Bradford, the Teddy Bridgewater are all getting contracts negotiated with other teams as well. But I felt pretty confident once we were able to start negotiating with his agent. He made the commitment to come to our team first, because it's rare that a quarterback of that stature gets out on the open market. And so once he committed to coming here, then we knew we had to definitely seal the deal.
You adopted that approach. You don't let them out the building once they're in.
Yeah, no, don't get them out. And we had pretty good, you know, sense talking to the agent, because he had a really strong interest here as well, I think, because of the team that we have around him, because of the coaching staff, and because of the success we've had on the field.
Rick, when you look at his contract, 3 years, all fully guaranteed, that has not been the case in recent NFL history or in any NFL history. What made you make that move to make it fully guaranteed? Two-part question. What made you offer a fully guaranteed contract? And do you think we'll see more of those in the future, or is it still kind of a, is that more of an outlier?
Well, the first thing was when I saw your contract and it was fully guaranteed for the next 5 years, I knew that played a significant role in it.
I'm a trendsetter.
Yeah. So basically, we took the Neil approach is what we call it. The Neil.
It's not the best business model, to be fair, but yeah.
I think the biggest thing was, like I said, the significance of that player at that position, because it's very rare that a quarterback at that age, at that stature, is going to come out on the open market. And he pretty much had a lot of control, and his agent did, over that contract. And if we were going to do that, I know that there were other teams that were definitely going to do that. So the biggest thing, because that position is so important, that you want to make sure you secure that player. And I don't know if that'll be the trend going forward, but it was such a unique thing with a player, like I said, at that position and with his talent level.
If it were to happen moving forward, would you expect to see it at the quarterback position and not across the board in terms of positions?
I think it's all dependent on, on the position, on the player, and the uniqueness of the opportunity. But I don't know if that'll be a trend going forward. But I don't also know when a quarterback like that will come on the open market again. I think we try to compare it to the last quarterback that came on the open market like that, but he also had some shoulder injuries at the time, was Drew Brees when he signed down at New Orleans.
Yeah, absolutely. This move is bound to create excitement. You were in the NFC Championship game last year, and now you add Kirk Cousins. How do you manage that expectation, or do you relish that kind of expectation and challenge and being considered one of the top dogs in the NFL? Do you relish it, or do you try and manage it?
I think it's, everybody knows the expectations here. The players know it, the coaches know it, and it's just, but it's a whole brand new season. You can't predict the injuries or the way the ball is going to bounce. But if you don't have those expectations at this time of the year, then you shouldn't be in the NFL. But I think if you ask 31 other teams what their expectations are, we do this because everybody wants to be say that they won a Super Bowl and they're world champions. And if you don't have that attitude going in and don't put that, that excitement or that urgency on your football team, then why do this?
We saw you add Trevor Siemian at quarterback to add depth in that quarterback room, and then to add a bunch of new players in the draft. Is depth an important thing in the NFL? Because we all look at the depth charts, Rick, and we look at who's starting, and unless we're a general manager or a scout, we might not go much further than the number ones. But how important is depth on an NFL team, and do you feel you guys addressed that during this offseason?
Yeah, I believe we did. And when you look at our team, and we have some very good players that are now, we've got them relatively cheap off their rookie contract, but we're able to just extend Eric Kendricks. We got a few more extensions coming up. So our team may be a little different than all teams, is that we're getting an economic class of very high paid players that are in our starting positions, but you can't have high paid players because of our salary cap behind them. So what we have to do is we have to get youth that have a lot of upside, a lot of potential, that are good football players. And I think the luxury that we have is that this coaching staff has proven year in and year out that they love to get a hold of these athletes and develop them. And this league is about development as well. So if you do lose one of your star players, you have to have, from an economic class, someone who is not making $10 million be a backup, but still try to come in and perform at that same level.
Rick, what's the plan now for the scouting, for the front office? The draft is out of the way, free agency is out of the way, but I guess this is good insight for the fans here in the UK. I guess the roster is a living, evolving thing, that there's never fully a period where you switch off, is there?
No, at the maybe the intensity level is not as high as it's been the last 3 months, but there is a waiver wire that we monitor who's getting released every day. You know, our rookies are coming in for their first exposure this weekend to rookie minicamp. We'll start that evaluation process as soon as they walk in the door. But you're always monitoring, and you're always, you can never be satisfied for where your roster is. You're always continuing to try to get better players. So we're going to see where these rookies are, how quickly they can develop. But in the meantime, you're always keeping your eye, you know, on what's going on outside and any potential players. After the draft, you've made, most teams have made the most significant moves they can to improve their roster heading into next season. But there's always a tweak here or there, and you'll always continue to work that on a daily basis.
All right, good stuff. Rick, one last question. If my five-year contract at Sky doesn't work out, do you have any need for a middle-aged skinny kicker?
Well, we would, but we can't afford you under the salary cap, especially with that guaranteed contract. You know, £1.5 million a year, it just don't work over here.
No, fair enough. I will seek other alternatives. Rick,
if you work for if you can work for Tea and Crumpets, we'd love to have you.
There we go. Rick, thanks for joining us. I'll speak to you soon for sure.
All right, thanks, Neil. I'll enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Cheers. Jeff, it's interesting there what Rick said about, you know, that obviously all the leverage was with Kirk Cousins when it came to his contract. That's why the Minnesota Vikings offered him all 3 years fully guaranteed. Rick didn't know if that would become a trend in the NFL, and we actually saw that play out. You know, Matt Ryan's got a large chunk of his money guaranteed, but not all of it. But Kirk Cousins played an absolute blinder when it came to the system and getting the most out of his next contract.
Yeah, and I think Cousins, you know, again, it's like we always talk, supply and demand economics. You know, and I think Rick Spielman needs to be applauded, you know, for doing that, because he did what he had to do to get the guy that he wanted. Now, what's the trickle down? What's the long-term ramification? Well, we see it now with Matt Ryan, and that will be the trend going forward. What will, as you said earlier, what will that contract that Rodgers eventually signs look like? Well, look at Kirk Cousins and look at Matt Ryan's and one up that one. And, you know, it's just what you have to do. I think Rick Spielman has done a phenomenal job in Minnesota, Neil.
Yeah,
me too. A phenomenal job.
Me too. He's never afraid to make the big move or the big decision, Jeff. When Teddy Bridgewater went down a couple of seasons ago, right at the end of training camp, you know, Rick didn't cry or wring his hands. He was straight on the phone and he dealt for Sam Bradford. And you know, he's very, very aggressive, and also he makes a point of and does a good job of re-signing their own, Jeff. They go and draft these players and then they keep them in the building. Harrison Smith had a new contract, the same with Eric Kendricks recently. We saw Xavier Rhodes as well. I mean, they want to keep these guys in the building. I think he's not only developing his own, he's going out and being aggressive when he has to.
Yeah, and you know, to me, you look at a guy's track record, and you know, over time, and I'm talking about all the way, Neil, when he was with the Dolphins, and we really got to know him in NFL Europe because he was always around training camp and very, very accessible, and you know, always a good guy that way. You look how he builds his teams, but you know, let's talk about the draft for just a second. You know, amplify on exactly what you said. Who's he take with the first round pick? You know, he gets Mike Hughes, who is exactly what he needs. You know, they played Marcus Sherrills at nickel corner, you know, a slot corner for the last couple of years. And that's not to say that Sherrills has got deficiencies. He is a adequate player in that spot. But, you know, with Patrick Newman leaving, and now you're looking at to upgrade an area on your football team, he went out and got, to me, the best nickel corner in the draft. And I think that's a... Plus, he also brings return ability, which is one of the reasons why Sherrills was able to stay on the roster, because of his punt return ability. So I thought it was that pick, I thought in particular, was a great pick.
All right, let's move on to our State of the Franchise series then. We're going to pick up with the Cincinnati Bengals. We're also going to look at the Washington Redskins today. Jeff, let's look at the Bengals then. I'll give you the tail of the tape on this team that went 7-9 last year. Offense was 32nd. Dead last in the NFL, just 280 yards per game. Rushing, they were 31st. Passing, 27th. Total defense, they were 18th. 30th against the run. 8th against the pass. They had a dramatic end to the season with that 4th-and-12 touchdown pass from Andy Dalton to Tyler Boyd, which knocked Baltimore out of the playoffs. It was one of the few highlights. And let's start right at the top here, Jeff, with the Bengals, because Marvin Lewis signed a contract extension when it looked for all the world at the end of last season like he would be gone, either in a mutual parting of ways or in a firing. He is back.
Yeah, you know what? He's got more lives than, you know, than a cat, I think, you know, when it comes down to that. And we speculated, Neil, for probably 3 or 4 years that, you know, is this Marvin's last year? Marvin is one of those guys that just seems to, you know, get enough done positive to continue to, you know, to be in Cincinnati. Now, there's a lot of talk, and I know this is kind of a popular thing to say, well, the only reason that he's there is the Browns are cheap. You know, I'm talking about the family that owns the team. Mm. They're cheap, and they don't want to, you know, they don't want to go through the, you know, the cost of, you know, because new head coaches are expensive now, too. But I don't buy into that. I think Marvin has done a really good job in a very tough situation. You know, this is a team, Neil, that 3 or 4 years ago we thought was on the cusp of getting to a Super Bowl. And, I think realistically they were. You know, you look at where I question the Bengals continuously is they continually bring, you know, questionable character guys. And, you know, whether it's Vontaze Burfict or, you know, you go on and on and on and on through their history, that seems to be their M.O. Now, you look at them now, 30th against the run. What does that tell you? Not tough enough, not strong enough, not big enough. You know, offensively, their struggles were well documented. Had to change the coordinators early in the season. You know, I just really think that Andy Dalton now has kind of been exposed a little bit. When you lost that great offensive line, Whitworth and all those guys left, you know, he's now, you know, having to, you know, play beyond what he's capable of doing sometimes.
Let's have a look at Dalton, yeah. Jeff. Let's have a look at Andy Dalton, because he's heading into his 8th season now. And, you know, I've said this before when, you know, I talked in the past about Jay Cutler, how there were times when he was kind of sloppy and he didn't perform at a certain level. And I said, after 8 or 9 years, you kind of are what you are in the NFL. I mean, is Andy Dalton, you know, he's now going to go into his 8th year, and has he really progressed that much, or has it been hard on him because he was sacked 80 times in the last 2 years, Jeff? Now, they've tried to address that this year with Cordy Glenn coming in via Buffalo for a trade, and they used their first-round draft pick on Billy Price at center. It's hard to know how much of this is on Dalton, and is he kind of what he's always going to be now, do you think?
I agree that he's what he is, right? I think Andy Dalton, and again, you know, again, I was at SMU and we played him. Yeah, you know, nothing special. He gives you what he gives you, which is he's not going to make bad mistakes typically. He's not going to make huge plays typically. He's a very, very, again, middle of the road functional guy. I don't think he's a guy that particularly elevates all the players around him, a transcendent player. So, yeah, I think he's good enough to win with. I don't know if he's good enough to carry a team, though. That's my question.
One guy they've got to get more out of, Jeff, is John Ross, right? The rookie, it was a wipeout season, the rookie first-rounder from last year. I know AJ Green has been singing his praises in the off-season. We should expect nothing else. But John Ross was a huge frustration, and he was probably frustrated himself. He just couldn't get healthy.
Well, you know, Neil, there's no, as they say, there's no greater predictor of the future than the past.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at John Ross, everybody fell in love with John Ross when?
At he ran combine, that combine, yeah.
When he ran that blazing 40-yard dash, right? Well, beware of evaluating players in their underwear. I'm just telling you, it's, you know, it's his history at Washington was much the same. Streaky player, when he's healthy, made plays, not big, not durable. You know, so again, when you sink your, you know, that much into a guy like that, don't be surprised if you're going to, you know, get hurt a little bit, because he has never been a guy that's been a durable, you know, every down player. That's just not his. That's not his profile.
Jeff, just as we look at some of the defensive players, they've still got Carlos Dunlap. Geno Atkins in the middle is still unblockable at times at defensive tackle. So, you know, against the pass, as the numbers kind of backed it up, 8th against the pass, 30th against the run, they seem able to hold up against the pass. I mean, just generally with this team, as we kind of wrap up the Bengals, are you feeling positive about them? Are they an arrow up team? Where do you kind of put them in the grand scheme of things?
Well, to me, the Bengals are a team, Neil, that, you know, they can beat anybody on their schedule and they can be a factor in the race. Mm. But I don't see the consistent performance from Cincinnati that I think it would take for them to overcome Pittsburgh, to overcome Baltimore, to, you know, to be a playoff team unless they just have one of those years, you know, that where everything goes right for them and they keep everybody healthy and Pittsburgh gets nicked up. And I just think that, you know, Cincinnati's what Cincinnati has been. They can be 10-6, they can be 6-10, they can be 8-8. They're just that kind of team. And again, it's hard for me to, I don't want to be negative about them. I'm just telling you how I feel. I think they're probably at 8-8 team, a 9-7 team, and out of the playoffs, but good enough to beat you if you don't show up and play.
And I wonder if that's where we are with our next team, the Washington Redskins, who also went 7-9 last season. They're a dangerous team on their day, but consistency evaded them. Absolute ton of injuries last year. Destroyed by injuries in the second half of the season. Had so many players. I think more than 20... were on injured reserve at one point, but the offense was ranked 16th in the NFL, of course, under Kirk Cousins. He's now a Minnesota Viking. Rushing offense was 28th in the NFL. Passing was 12th. Defense was 21st. They were the worst in the NFL against the run. 134.1 yards allowed per game, and they were 9th, one of the better pass defenses in the NFL. Jeff, I put the Redskins in the same bracket as the Bengals there in that intro because, you know, they can be dangerous on their day. They can make some noise. And here they are. They're still not the powerhouse in their division.
No. And, you know, Neil, I think that's a very fair evaluation. And, you know, there's some very similar things between the two teams. You know, if you can't stop the run, and, you know, we talk about it being a pass happy league, and it is, but still you've got to be physical up front. You've got to be able to stop the run. You cannot let people just pound away at you. You know, I think when they went out and drafted, you know, the big kid from Alabama, I was, you know, frankly relieved. If I was a Redskin fan, I know that everybody talked about Vita Vea as the guy that, you know, they had targeted to be, you know, the guy. But when Tampa took him, they came back and, in my opinion, got a more consistent, better football player. Because I think DeRon is going to be one of those guys that can push in the middle and will give them a physical presence, a physical toughness that they have not had in the middle of that line since, you know, when Albert Haynesworth was playing and playing hard. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think that's what that kid's going to bring to them. You know, I thought their draft was really an interesting one. You know, they went out and took a chance on a dynamic running back. You know, if Geis can keep his off the field stuff, you know, solid, and he can get to meetings on time, and he can do all they do, he can become a pro. That kid, Neil, in the history of the Southeast Conference, which is, to me, the best conference in football, college football, no back has ever had 3 250-yard games except for Geis. I mean, you're talking about all of them, and those are some great backs to come out of that league.
Yeah.
And Todd Gurley didn't do it. You know, Fournette didn't do it. None of those guys. But he did it, right? If that guy can be a pro and not get caught up in all the stuff, and Washington's a tough town because there's a lot of attractions in Washington. If he can do that, then he could be that missing piece that gets them a running game, which they desperately needed.
Yeah, he could become the first 1,000-yard rusher for the Washington Redskins since Alfred Morris in 2014. Let's have a look at some of the offensive players then. Jeff, I have no doubt that, I mean, in the same way that Kirk Cousins was a facilitator of the football to different targets around the field for the Redskins when he was throwing for 4,500, 4,900 yards, I have no doubt Alex Smith can still do that job for the Redskins. But is the supporting cast what it was when we saw Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson both go over 1,000 yards? We got Josh Doctson at receiver. Jameson Crowder kind of had a quiet year last year. I like him a lot, but he was quiet last year. Paul Richardson at receiver. You got Jordan Reed at tight end, and you've still got a pretty good offensive line. Is this a... I mean, you feel like if they can get a spark in the running game, you know, we know what Smith is going to do, but what about that receiving core? Is it enough?
I think it's enough, Neil, and I think that, you know, and I want to talk about the Smith thing a little bit. I think this is really going to be interesting because it's almost like they kicked Kirk Cousins out. Let's be honest.
Almost like.
They had numerous chances to sign him.
Oh, yeah, they had no interest in a long-term deal.
And so if that's the case, now you've gone out and got the guy that you want. Now it's on the front office. Now it's on those guys because you know what you lost in Kirk Cousins. We don't know what we've got in Alex Smith, right? Can he be that downfield thrower? Can he be consistent with the ball? Again, I like Alex Smith, but again, when you're talking about, you know, he's now their guy. So they're going to do everything they can to make him successful. I think, like I said earlier, I think drafting guys is a huge, huge risk, but it also could pay huge, huge dividends.
It's funny because, Alex will take more chances with the football won't take as many chances. He doesn't turn it over as much. Kirk is a little bit more of a gambler. But, Jeff, in terms of kind of game managing and spreading the ball around the offense, there's not much between Kirk Cousins and Alex Smith, apart from Kirk is actually a few years younger, and because he played the franchise stuff, was going to come more expensive. But it's not a clear upgrade in terms of Alex Smith over Kirk Cousins. In fact, if you ask the two teams right now, I think the Vikings would be feeling the better of those two. What about on defense? And we talked about De'Ron Payne. They had Jonathan Allen last year in the first round. They've still got our old friend Josh Norman in the secondary, and that pass defense, as I said, was ninth in the NFL last year.
Yeah, again, the issue, as I've watched the Redskins, and I've watched a lot of tape on them in the offseason, they just defensively just didn't have a toughness that, comes from your front guys. You know, Josh Norman is, in my opinion, still a great player in the back end. And he is the heartbeat, I think, of that back end group. But you need guys up front. You need the big guys. And the big guys right now in Washington, and I think this is where Payne was a really good pick for him, I think that he's going to have to, and this is a lot to ask a rookie, but he's going to have to toughen up that front seven. And until that front seven shows that they've got a firmer chin, then I'm not buying the Redskins. Because when you have to make a play, when you have to make a stop on third and short, when you have to get vertical pressure against the quarterback on, third and eight, your front guys got to deliver. And their front guys did not deliver. They've had numerous guys through there in the last 3 or 4 years and just cannot seem to find a toughness that they need. And again, I hope De'Ron Payne can be part of that answer.
Jeff, arrow up or arrow down for the Washington Redskins? If it's a down season, it's Jay Gruden on a very, very hot seat.
I agree. I think this is a for me, Neil, this is a plateaued team right now.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of questions that are going to need to get answered before I can say they're an upgrade.
Jeff, I've got a couple of questions in the mailbag. One here from George Wicks. Let's get into the questions just to finish up this week's Inside the Huddle. George says, after watching the All or Nothing series with the Dallas Cowboys, I came away with the impression that Jason Garrett's main responsibility seemed to be motivating the players and staff while the coaches did the X's and O's side. Is that accurate? And can the same be said for the other 31 teams? Jeff, we often hear this phrase that a head coach has to let his coaches coach. Is that true that, you know, there it's a lot of the assistant coaches that do a lot of the X's and O's?
Very, very much so. Very, very much so. The head coach is, you know, like the CEO of the corporation. I mean, he should know everything that's going on and all the, you know, all aspects of the football team. But here's what Coach Vermeil used to say, Neil, is, and I asked him that question one time. I said, Coach, what do you feel is the number one responsibility of the head coach? And his response was to put a team on the field that is ready to be coached. And what does that mean? Well, think about it. It's making sure that you put your guys on the field ready to be coached by the assistant coaches. And that's the mental aspect of it. You know, the question was about Garrett, was his job to motivate? Well, yes, it is to motivate, but it's to prepare the football team to be coached and then to let the coaches do the job. Now, each guy has different personalities. For example, if you were ever around Parcells or Belichick, they're coaching everybody, right, all the time. And then there are other guys that sit back, and Pete's a little bit like that. You know, watching him last weekend, he's high energy all around the field, you know, getting involved in every drill. But there are other guys who will stand back and just, you know, be like just the overseer. You know, they just kind of making sure that everything's moving in the right direction. So it's within the personality, but ultimately the assistant coaches are the ones that have the day-to-day, you know, improvement of the player.
All right, let's take a couple more. Here's one from at Scottish Ravens, who says, can we see a potential fallout or any animosity between Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson? If the Ravens have a poor start to the season, do you think Ravens fans will abandon Joe and go with Lamar? Jeff, the most popular player on most NFL teams is the backup quarterback. As I said with the whole kind of, look at when Kansas City hit the skids last year, and Andy Reid, to his credit, said, we're not doing this. This is Alex Smith's team. What was the world and his wife suggesting? Patrick Mahomes should be in there and playing. There is going to come a time. This is a big offseason. This is a big season for Joe Flacco in terms of having some skill position players around him. They've rolled the dice on John Brown, Michael Crabtree, Willie Snead. They've got Alex Collins. Mm-hmm. They get Hayden Hurst in the first round of the draft. They've given Flacco some stuff to work with. If he doesn't, I do think he is this year's Alex Smith.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of credence with that statement. And here's another thing that you can throw onto the conjecture pile if you want. Marty Morningwig, the offensive coordinator, has had a lot of success with Michael Vick, right? That kind of guy. So it's not outside of the... You know, some offensive coordinators, I'll be honest with you, Neil, they don't want Lamar Jackson. They don't want an RG3.
Right.
They want a guy that does exactly the way it's coached, and so that the system can be the reason for the success, not the athlete. Now, that sounds crazy, but that's just the way it is, right? So when you take a Lamar Jackson who's going to make plays out of the offense, you know, that's a football term, out of the offense. You know what I mean?
Off script.
Outside the
Yep.
Yeah, off script, outside the scheme. Well, you know, what is that? That's not helping you get your next head coaching job.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I think Marty's another guy who can handle that. He likes those kind of guys. He likes guys that have creativity that can, you know, make things happen. So, you know, that's not Flacco's strength. And so if they don't succeed early, I would not be surprised at all if we don't see Lamar Jackson.
All right, one last one, Jeff, from our friend Vernon Kay. He wants to know, have you stolen his blue jacket? No, he doesn't really want to know that. He wants to know, will Shahid Khan's purchase of Wembley influence the NFL UK franchise question? I think this moves us significantly closer to having a London team, Jeff. Having the potential of an NFL owner owning Wembley Stadium, there's still a long way for that to go, for that to happen. But if it happens, I think we've moved a massive step closer to having a team of our own.
I agree 1,000%. It tilts the meter like I can't even describe to you what a jump ahead of schedule that would be. Mm. You know, and when you have control over the stadium, and you know, that's the showpiece stadium, right? That's the one that they want. And to have control over that, I think really, really, really tilts the meter towards, you know, having a London franchise.
All right. Good stuff, Jeff. We are out of time on this week's Inside the Huddle. We will be back next week. We're going to pick up state of the franchise with the Green Bay Packers. Didn't get to the Packers today, but there was plenty to talk about, Jeff, as always.
Yes, certainly was. And you did a great job. And I just want to say, Neil, I thought you did an outstanding job with the draft coverage. It was so cool to see that much coverage on the draft and to, you know, get guys like Peter King to weigh in and Ross Tucker to weigh in and Solomon Wilcox to weigh in. I thought it was outstanding coverage. And, again, credit to you and Sky and everybody that brought that to the viewers. I know the response from every viewer I've talked to or heard from has been phenomenal. So let's expand it.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. And it was a first, Jeff, because we got you involved in the draft coverage. It's the first time I've ever interviewed a man sitting on an exercise ball, one of those training balls. And I'm glad, my friend, that you have legendary balance, and didn't, because I would have probably just gone flying off the side of the screen. So you didn't move an inch, and that's to your credit. So my thanks to Jeff Reinbold. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this week. We'll be back with more Inside the Huddle this time next week. Until then, say goodbye to the good folks, Jeff.
Aloha.